Welcome everyone to the week ahead. Plenty has happened this week. We've had Trump in the news as per usual. We've had China alongside him and Musk, all before we had labor market data. Dominique is being crazy. How are you?
How are you, Ben? Very nice to see you too.
I'm tired. You must be too. But really, we should concentrate on the markets. So let's kick things off probably with US and China. I think that's one of the big three topics for the week. We had a sort of tit for tat complaints. The US was complaining about rare earths, China was complaining about AI. Then they seemed to get on a phone call or a call of some sort, and Trump seems to have claimed a mini victory. Rare earths are probably coming back to the US in some form. What do you make of the update and tariffs in general at the moment?
So I think there are really two key issues the market need to be focused on. The first one, the China-US is a story. It's a process. We're always going to have up and down. Why? Because the administration is trying for a reset of the relationship. It's something new, like for instance, in the past, China had made agreement like under Trump, the first Trump administration agreement to buy a certain amount of US export. Those were not implemented. Now we have, I don't want to use the expression, a new sheriff in town, but we certainly have an administration that is much more focused, Treasury Secretary, US Trade Representative, who are really very focused on making sure the Chinese side delivers. So they identified rare earth as an issue. There is a risk that car manufacturing in the US could stop in the next few weeks for lack of access to these rare earths that was part of the deal with China. So, the reset of the relationship is not going to be easy. We're going to have spats along the way. But to me, it's overall a positive because it means the bad news is actually good news because it means a reset is happening. And given, the extent of non-tariff barriers in China and also China's, shall we say, aggressive approach to intellectual property rights. I think, this reset is actually good for the economy and for the market. So that's the first thing. The China-US relationship is not going to be plain sailing, but bad news is good news because it means a reset is happening. The second thing is that we really need to be very focused on is around tariff policy, the whole issue of discretion. Because right now we have unconstrained discretion on the part of the administration, because President Trump has relied on the IEEPA, I think, to impose his tariff. As you know, a week ago this was struck by the court, but the court decision was stayed, which means the current regime is still in effect until the appeal court reviews the decision, which I think is going to happen fairly soon, probably by the end of the month. If the appeal court confirms the initial ruling, the administration is going to appeal to the Supreme Court, and that I think, a Supreme Court decision could take up to a year. So, what is important here is to think. One, what we need for stronger growth is lower policy uncertainty, and so we need less discretion in tariff policy. And less discretion in tariff policy is going to come if the initial ruling of the lower court is confirmed, because this ruling will force the administration to rely on other laws like the Trade Act, the Trade Protection Act, and these will force the administration to be more structured. There is a process. If you want to impose tariff under those acts, you need to ask comments from the public and, blah, 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 blah. So it will be slower, more predictable, Even if the administration uses a provision of the IEEPA that actually allows it to raise tariff, there is a limit in the level of the tariff and the duration of the tariff. So we need more structure in tariff policy. It's likely to be imposed by the courts, but it could take a long time. So this is, I think, the other aspect. Less discretion. That's what we need for better growth prospect.
There's just a couple questions I have following that. One is on the China side. I mean, where do we actually go from here? I know you said you think we can see some mini spats in the future, but do you realistically see a trade deal, say, over the summer? And the second question is around the updates to sort of the court rulings, etc. And let's say Trump's able to tariff the same way he's been able to now, so the courts sort of don't block him. One is, can they go after his ability to tariff again? And if he can tariff like he has been able to, do you think that means Trump is more aggressive straight out of the block because, okay, he's finally got complete freedom? Or is he just sort of more measured as he seems to have been recently?
Okay, so on the first question, where do we go from here? I think we go towards a more balanced relationship with Ch between China and the US. And we can see that because the administration initial tariff of 145% was basically mutually assured economic destruction. This is a Cold War era term, MAD, mutually assured nuclear destruction. No one wants that. We saw that rationality prevailed, and there was a deal because the initial 145% tariff meant a de facto embargo on Chinese goods, which on the US side would have meant shortage of goods and spare parts and inputs. On the Chinese side, they had riots in around places where exporters, factories had shut down. So unsustainable, I think long term, we go to a better place, but expect some wiggles around that trend. So the second question,
Let me
what
repeat. It was the first part is, let's say that the court doesn't block Trump's ability to tariff this time around. Could they go after him again in some alternative way? And the second part to that question is, if he, let's say, the court doesn't block his ability to tariff as he has been able to, will he sort of go to town, knowing that he's got full freedom to tariff however he likes once it's sort of cleared? Or do you think he stays as sort of measured as he's been over the past sort of month?
Okay, so we have a number of lawsuits ongoing, but I would think that the current rulings are probably to settle the probably like likely to settle the issue of whether legally Trump's policy discretion can be limited. So I think once we get the rulings of the appeal court and most likely of the Supreme Court, that settles the legal issue. Now, does that mean that rationality will still be unbounded? I don't think so. Again, there is the issue of economic impact and the issue of voters' reaction. You know, we have the midterm in the US, we have elections every 2 years, a midterm in what, November next year? So a little bit above, actually, it's even less than a year and a half. So if Trump loses his majority in the House, which is a best case scenario because that happens to most administration, his ability to implement his reform will be very severe, will be severely affected. So I think he's going to remain very sensitive to voters' reaction. And if you look to vote at voters' reaction to his turn in tariff policy, it's been very positive. You've really had a recovery in his net approval rating. So we will still get some constraint on policy discretion, but not as much as if we had a court ruling.
Now, talking of sort of the upcoming midterms, it puts pressure into all of Trump's policies. One of the policies in the headlines recently has been his new tax bill. And then we've had Trump and Musk in the headlines. We've sort of taken the adults out of the room that we had for US and China. We sort of put the kids in the room with Trump and Musk. It's certainly that's what their online interactions feel like. What do you make of it?
So again, we need to ignore the noise, focus on the signal. So, yes, the noise is a very public spat. The signal is what's going on with fiscal policy. And two things there. First of all, if you look at the details, you see that the administration is planning for a small decrease in the deficit this fiscal year, which ends in September. This is in the law, but if you look at the pattern of government spending at data like the daily treasury cash flow, you can see very clearly that there's been a turnaround in the increase in the deficits. Deficit's still growing, but more slowly. Also, you look at the government procurement data, it's down relative to last year. So I think there is a very deliberate attempt here to have actually a small negative fiscal impact now. Next year, that gets reversed. I mean, the budget allows for an increase in the deficit next year. But here's what is interesting. The budget does not include the impact of the current tariff policy. And that's very deliberate. In fact, this budget process has been very unusual in the sense that the involvement of the White House has been much stronger than usual. Secretary Bessent has held weekly meetings at the White House with Republican congressional leaders to work on the budget. And he has been very successful, by the way. And on purpose, the budget did not include tariffs so that President Trump policy discretion would be unaffected, would be completely free. And also, he would be better able to use tariff as a threat to obtain concessions from tariff partner from trading partners.
I guess the other
So
side of that, do you see that? I mean, if the deficit, let's say the deficit goes ahead as sort of projected now, excluding the tariffs, if tariffs raise revenues ahead, surely that's a Trump can claim a year down the line. Look, the deficit's a lot
that's it.
smaller. We've raised money. Look, I'm doing
But
God's work here.
100%. So what happened is that the Democrats, the Senate Democrat, asked the CBO. So the CBO, it's a bipartisan agency that scores the budget. So what I'm talking about in terms of budget is the CBO score. So the CBO score ignored tariff because tariff were not included in the budget law. So the Senate wrote to the CBO and asked what's the tariff impact? And this, in my view, is the ignored big news of the week. This is amazing. The CBO found that the tariff could decrease the deficit by 2.8 trillion over 10 years, which is more than the increase in the deficit of 2.4 trillion over 10 years, which is in the budget law. And what is absolutely remarkable from this estimate is the CBO thinks it can be done with limited damage to the economy. They think the higher tariff will lower growth by 6 basis points a year over 10 years. So the GDP 10 years from now will be 60 basis points lower than otherwise. And given that GDP is growing, the trend is about 2% a year. So we're talking about small change, no impact on the economy, and same thing on inflation. The CBO thinks PC would go up by 40 basis points in 2025 and 2026, and nothing after. So this is a very benign view of the impact of the tariff. And I'm sorry to say, but it actually vindicates President Trump. point that his tax cut could be funded by the tariff. Now, we haven't seen the details of the CBO study, but from my experience of reading their work, they are a very solid shop, and they probably have solid, analytical and data reason to take this this view. So, fiscal policy actually may not turn out as expansionary as the consensus thinks it is.
And two questions to follow. One is, if tariffs aren't in CBO projections this time, do you know when they will be included into CBO projections? Is there, I'm sort of asking an expert here, do you know when they will be included? And the other side of things is the OBBB is passed the House. Do you know when it will pass the Senate? Do we have to, is there a date we need to be watching out on that side as well?
Okay, so the tariff can't be included in the CBO scoring of the budget until they get included in the budget law. And knowing how the administration works, I think they will leave the budget law without tariff so that they can change, tweak the tariff, and then they will keep asking the CBO for estimates. I mean, so that they can turn to the market and say, you see, we are not, we are being fiscally responsible. I think we are going to have a dance of that nature. Now, in terms of when do we get the budget? Well, the budget includes something quite important, which is an increase in the debt ceiling, another peculiarity of our American public finance system. So the ceiling is binding. Secretary Bessent thinks that he's going to run out of money sometime in August. Now, the House and the Senate go on summer holidays, sorry, summer recess, they call it, at the end of July. So we need a budget and a debt ceiling increase by the end of July. Otherwise, the US would default, which would be would not be very good. So the administration target date was July 4th. I mean, great symbolism, President Trump in the Oval Office on National Day signing off, a transformational budget. But it looks like it's not going to happen. So I think end of next month is a most likely date.
Okay, so basically watch out for end of July on that side of
Yeah.
things. Now, if we move away from politics a bit, can't really ignore them these days, but we let's go focus on the data a tiny bit. We've had a lot of labor market data this week. We had ADP at mid of the week, seemed weak, but obviously everyone will come up with different headlines about ADP, whether it's useful, whether it's not. We had claims, et cetera, et cetera. Then we had NFP. It was slightly stronger than expected. Unemployment stayed at 4.2%. Wages were a tiny bit stronger than expected, and participation slipped a couple of tenths of a percentage point. I mean, number one, what's your take? And number two, are we missing anything?
Oh, we always are missing something. Otherwise, there wouldn't be surprises. But my take is basically, this is not going telling us much about what's going to happen because the NFP post-pandemic, we've had a structural shift in the labor market. Businesses had a really tough time finding workers, so they've been much more reluctant to let people go. And so we've seen a decline in labor market flows across the board, hiring, firing, quits, everything. And so what this means is that if growth slows, and you are seeing signs that growth is slowing, I mean, the Atlanta Fed forecast, durable goods, capital goods order, consumption is slowing, so growth is slowing. But compared with before the pandemic, businesses are going to hoard labor precisely because they don't want to find themselves in a situation where they can't find workers. So, in terms of where we are going to see a slowdown, we're going to see it first in the goods and services market and second in the labor market. And I think the data today is very much consistent with that in the sense that We have a slowdown in NFP, no question. If you compare with the 6 months average, which is something like 170 or what we had today, even if we had a positive surprise, and the positive surprise, by the way, also reflects the fact that the data was revised down last month. So that tricked everybody, including Sam's model. So labor demand is slowing, but the balance between demand and supply, which is the unemployment rate, is unchanged. Why? Because labor supply is slowing as well. There's no more immigration, and so labor supply is becoming more driven by US demographics, and we're all getting on, we Americans. So labor supply growth is slowing as well. And where you see that the NFP is actually not telling us much about, what's coming is a very small change in manufacturing employment. I mean, manufacturing is the sector most exposed to the tariff because it's the most import intensive and also most exposed to external demand and so to retaliation from our trade partners. And the contraction of 8,000 in manufacturing employment is a nothing burger. So the worst is still to come, which simply reflects the fact that if you look at tariff last month, in April, average tariff was again about 6%, when the administration is targeting about 18%. So in terms of tariff, the worst is still to come. And businesses, are not rushing to lay off people because of their experience with labor shortages. Instead, what they are doing is slowing their hires. So in terms of market impact, I mean, it's good and bad. It's bad in the sense that it shows growth is slowing. So that means slower demand, slower profit. But the NFP showed no inflationary pressure in the sense that the labor market, it still has full employment. We didn't see a decrease in unemployment. We saw stable wage growth. Yes, well, month on month, wage growth was 40 basis points against 20, but this was 20 basis points last month. So on balance, over the 2 months, no change in the trend. And this validates Governor Waller's points that yes, we have survey-based inflation expectation running at 6-7%, but look at wage growth. This is not having any impact. So I would say this NFP validates his view that the Fed needs to focus on market-based inflation expectations. We can't see inflationary pressure this print.
And before we move on to the Fed, only a couple of weeks until the Fed, we should probably go on to CPI, PPI, both of them next week. What do you have any expectations for them? And do you think, do you expect to see some pass-through from tariffs finally in one of those? What are you looking at, and what do you think the market are looking for?
Okay, so what's important is not so much the headline numbers. The consensus is for 30 basis points increase in core month for month. It's signs of pass-through of so-called second-round effects, meaning increases, above-trend increases in goods that are not being tariffed, like second-hand car, really good indicator. Or services. We're not seeing that at all so far, but that really is a key thing to look out for. And otherwise, yeah, it would be nice to have another low print because, it would turn the Fed a little hawkish. What the Fed keeps telling us is that they are very worried about de-anchoring of long-term inflation expectations, second-round effects from the tariff. We're not seeing that. What we are seeing, I think, is businesses that are very cautious. They haven't really seen the brunt of the tariff, so they have yet to feel the pain. But they are super cautious, and we're seeing it, for instance, with US Airlines. Last month, airfares were like 10% down relative to December. And this was airlines worried about a slowdown in demand, preemptively bringing down prices. And that was a key driver of the low services inflation prints. So I'm expecting a continuation of those trends. People read the headlines, they see the, the very visible spat between the president and Musk. They get worried and they are very cautious with their price moves. So that's my expectation.
Okay, and then just lastly on the Fed, given that they're a couple of weeks away, and CPI, PPI probably turn out to not be all that much, in the grand schemes of things. When are you expecting a first cut from the Fed, and how do you think Powell sets himself up at the next meeting?
So I was expecting a weaker overall print. I was expecting an increase in the rate of unemployment this month. And given the data, I think I'm probably going to change my call, not so much for the whole year, which is still 2 to 3 cuts, but I thought the Fed could start cutting in July based on the benign inflation data and sign that the economy is really slowing, the labor market balance is shifting, not happening. So I'm probably going to move my call for a first cut in September.
And so almost it feels like a bit of deja vu that we've had with the Fed. Everyone goes, oh, look, the US economy is going to weaken. They move to cuts get extremely priced. Then people go, come on, let's be realistic. They get priced at like two or three, and then they go, okay, look, we'll start shifting our expectations for a first cut. We've been through that cycle already in this sort of semi-cutting cycle. What's the risk that, do you see much of a risk of Trump's tariffs taking so long to be implemented that we end up with just no cuts this year? Or do you see that there's just a fundamental weakness from the uncertainty that will sort of almost certainly deliver cuts this year?
More the latter. I mean, my view at the beginning, before April 2nd, was that the tariff would lift inflation and the Fed wouldn't be able to cut at all this year. But then the tariff were implemented in such a manner that they really lifted uncertainty, destroyed business and consumer confidence. So businesses and consumers are pulling in their horns, and what is happening is just that tariff implementation takes time. As I said, in April we were at 5.5% against the 18%. I think it's probably going the administration wants. It's probably going to take us 3 4 months to get to 18%. People, businesses are super cautious, so they don't want to move prices too much. They don't want to fire people too much because they are not sure they will be able to hire them back. On the other hand, they are holding off on employment, investment, and so on and so forth. So I think what we are likely to see is a gradual slowdown, and no sign of inflationary pressures, and eventually the Fed, will have to shift. I find the Fed stands very hawkish in the sense that, they are telling us there is no sign that the economy is weakening, but I don't think it's because the economy is not weakening. It's because it takes time for data to be published. And so we don't have a lot of data yet. So my base case is still that they will cut, that they will become more data-driven, they will see the balance of risk shift towards weaker employment rather than a stronger inflation, and eventually they'll cut.
Incredible. I think that's probably a good place to leave it there. That's half an hour of your great takes. Thank you, Dominique. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Ben, and good luck, everybody.